miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And you can always email us at youdocs@gmail.com. youdocs@gmail.com. The easy way to get in on the discussion, especially if you want to get in on the discussion about whether vaccines should be a choice or mandated, is to call us 877-711-5211, 877-711-5211. I have an email from Mandy who said, why is measles so infectious and what's happening with the flu? So let me go and basically talk about why measles is so infectious, and then we'll talk a little bit about the flu because it is now killing as many Americans as it did when it was at its highest about, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. Let me give you where it is now, because it was east and west, and now it is, if you will, in coming north and south. So we'll talk about measles first. So Mandy, thanks. So why is measles so infectious? Well, the virus is small enough and sturdy enough that it lives in the air. Just the air. Some things require secretions to live in. Some live in air. Some live only on surfaces in things that, such as saline, that foster their growth. Some require the correct temperature, etc. The measles vaccine will live in air, even in cold climates, for about two hours. And if you will, it was eliminated from the United States, meaning that the infectious no longer originates here. But worldwide, there are still 20 million cases, and about 150,000 people died from it in 2013. So this is not a trivial thing. It does kill people, and it kills them by developing an encephalitis. So that is a brain infection, or an infection on the areas that surround the, if you will, the curtain that covers the brain. But the interesting thing is, and of the brain tissue itself, the interesting thing is that it is a very, what we call resistant to environmental condition. So Mandy said if someone has it on a plane, she's on a plane overseas and going to a developing area, and she said they probably have measles there. If she's on that plane and someone has measles and she didn't, she didn't get vaccinated, would she be vulnerable to getting measles? And the answer is yes. But she is, Mandy wrote that she's over 60. So unless that's a rare person over 60, which means they were a child before the 1970s. Actually, she was a child, 14 years and 45 would be, in 1955 she was born. So, she would have, if you will, almost certainly had measles, because it is so infectious. And when you have it as a child, it's much less severe than when you have it as an adult. But what's happened with measles, if you will, in Maine, in Vermont, New Hampshire, in North Dakota, in Washington, in California, in the states, in Mississippi, Louisiana, both north and south, not as much east and west, except, of course, you got to say Maine is the eastern place, and Alaska, where it's very high now, is the, I think, other than Hawaii, where it's very high now, not Alaska. Hawaii, which is the most western state, So it is the most east and west, as well as the most north and south. The middle of the country seems spared from this high levels of flu, but it has caused a resurgence. And for this time of year, it's the second highest of any flu in the last 10 years. So there is still a risk of it. How long, Mandy also said, I didn't get the flu shot this year. I haven't gotten the flu to my knowledge. Should I still get the flu shot? And the answer is yes, because it takes only 2 weeks. It usually starts to be effective in 3 to 5 days, but in 2 weeks it reaches most of its effectiveness, and it's effective against flu or other strains that occur in March. So the B virus and the influenza strains, usually the non-A viruses usually peak in March rather than February, where the A3N2 tends to peak. So the answer is yes, still get it. And it is still fairly high and maybe even at a resurgence in the United States. And deaths from it are very high. The other question that we got asked, if you will, well, I did answer that. That was the one on measles. Now let's go back to the story on jogging. This is a very interesting story because it fits with a lot of other stories. And what this story is that light jogging was associated with greatly reduced all-cause mortality in this study. So this was the Copenhagen City Heart Study, and they looked at all-cause mortality and the amount of jogging a week. And it said that a couple hours of jogging at a moderate pace spaced over a week was the optimal dose. Now, let me tell you, there is an optimal dose that is the maximum benefit for minimum work you can do. And it is 10,000 steps a day, three components, 20 minutes of weightlifting a week, and then 20 minutes three times a week of cardiovascular exercise that raises your heart rate to 80% of your age-adjusted maximum, which was what light jogging does. Well, in this case, it reduced your all-cause mortality by 80%. That's amazing. 80% reduction, 78% reduction, just jogging. Now, on the other hand, strenuous jogging for more than 6 hours a week actually increased your mortality rate compared to light jogging or moderate jogging. It still was a little better. And what that shows is what we call a U-type curve, where the lowest mortality is actually at a little work. And why is that? Because when you do a lot of activity, such as you train for a marathon, you will get in better shape than the person who isn't training for a marathon. But on the other hand, you will exceed the ability of your cells to buffer the stress that you're putting on it. So it's the stress you're putting on it that causes the problem in the stress you're putting on your cells that causes damage to your cells and that causes you to age faster. You use up your repair cells and you create free radicals, which damage, damage the cells you have more than light jogging does. So that's why light jogging seems to be the ideal thing, plus that 10,000 steps a day, plus, of course, the weightlifting. And you do them in that order. But anyway, this study confirmed what we knew from prior work from the Cleveland Clinic, from the Cooper Clinic, from the alumni studies of Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania Men, and the Harvard Men studies that have been in existence for a number of years, and now the Jerusalem Longevity studies all show the same thing. That is, there's a three-component process. We'll be right back with a great guest, 13 things that mentally strong people don't do.